survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the Prepping Academy. I am Forrest. There's no Tenderfoot here tonight. He is not 6 foot under. He is just working. I wanted to bring to you a podcast that I was on just a week ago. A gentleman named David Vines. He's on PrepperBroadcasting.com. He has a show that is called All Hazard Communications and Preparedness. That's on PrepperBroadcasting.com. The show was recorded on September 4th, 2018. The show title was Communication Security Before, During, and After an SHTF. We got into a lot of different topics. I enjoyed it. David's a fellow member of the Carolina Preppers Network. And good show. Want to apologize for not having any podcast up lately. We are still doing podcasts. We are just in the process of taking the Carolina Preppers Network, which has been focused on the Carolinas. We're releasing a new site at the end of September where we will be taking a new name called PrepperNet.com. That's PrepperNet.com. We will be taking it nationwide. And it's a big undertaking, and currently going on is we're preparing for Hurricane Florence coming to the Carolinas, and there'll be more on that probably in a podcast I'll do tomorrow night and post it. But I hope you enjoyed this from the Prepper Broadcasting Channel, David Vines, All Hazards Communications and Preparedness, that was recorded last week. You guys take care, and we will be back. Have a good evening.
This message is transmitted at the request of the United States Office of Civil Defense.
Page 251-2110.
Message follows. Tango 6-3 Delta Yankee.
Yeah, I got a message.
Green Am, we're up the IP, bomb line checklist. Pilot center of the OCI and keep it centered.
Roger, centering SCI.
Roger, 10 seconds to go.
Radio Österreich International.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is your host, David Vine, for another information-packed podcast right here on the Prepper Broadcasting Network, live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. And we're on the East Coast of the good old USA, so it's 9 p.m. local for us here. Good evening or late afternoon for those out in California and maybe even Hawaii. Good afternoon. Anyway, tonight's guest is Forrest Garvin. He is what I would describe him as a prepper extraordinaire, and I mean that seriously. He's been into prepping for long before it was called prepping, and he's got a tremendous background. He's got a lot of skills. And he and I are going to talk about communication security, or a lot of people refer to it as ComSec, but communication security is tonight's topic. And we're going to be talking about some covert things. And before we get started, I do want to get a shout out to host, Prepper Broadcasting Network host, Michael Klein, whose Reality Check podcast is live every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. His show is one of the first that I heard on Prepper Broadcasting Network, and he always talks about real practical advice. There's nothing theoretical. You know, we like to get into the technical details sometimes. We try not to go too far into them on this podcast, but, you know, sometimes we have to describe what we're talking about. But Michael's show is very broad-based in the subjects. You know, he covers a lot of different territory, and he was talking most recently about deception, a very interesting topic. So, again, thank you, Michael, for being kind of like the leader in all this. I met him, by the way, at one of our guests' meetings. He has this network of meetup groups throughout the Carolinas, and actually I think in other states too, and soon to be national, and we're going to hear about that. But Forrest, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Describe what you do, Forrest.
Well, first of all, I do want to thank you for having me, and I appreciate G-Man and his years of service to our community, because G-Man has been doing this as long as I can remember. And then you mentioned Michael Klein, which is a friend of mine, and Michael is a great guy, and I would recommend anyone to listen to his show for sure on Friday nights. But Michael and I have broken bread many times together, so he's a great guy. But thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Tell us about the Carolina Preppers Network and what you have planned for that.
Okay. Well, I'm an ex-banker, and I was looking for other people that had this crazy mindset of preparing and having my family prepared for any situation. And some of my best friends that, you know, 5 years ago were actually on bulletin boards. And I finally, you know, got to the point that I'm like, I need to meet people. So I went to meetup.com and I created a meetup site. And about 3 months out.
Excuse me a second. What was the first city that you had that in?
That was in Charlotte, North Carolina. We ate at Fuddruckers. We met at Fuddruckers, which is an awful place to meet just for the fact of it is loud and kids were running everywhere. So we had, I think it was 5 people at the first meeting, and I was really discouraged because I, being an ex-banker, I just had this mindset that I was going to meet other people like me. And I tell this story a lot. I met this lady. She's like a hippie, long hair, colorful dress. And she's telling me she's a homesteader and natural herbs and medicine. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, this is not the type of people I wanted to meet. Little to know that they didn't need to change. I had to change. And now that lady is like one of my best friends. And I tell everyone I'm going to kidnap her because she has more skills than any other human being I've ever met. So
is this the same person you told me about that was identified with the resist movement?
No, that was a few years later. Yes. So a few years later, this young lady came in, had a resist movement T-shirt on, and I'm thinking, well, she's welcome. Nothing was ever brought up. 2 weeks later, she bought her sister, or 2 months later, she bought her sister, and I'm thinking, this is going to get bad. Well, 2 years later now, they are not only full-fledged members, but they are also on my planning team and are wonderful people. We have a few different opinions, but when it comes to government, privacy, we're right on board and trying to be prepared. We're right there together. So, but back at 5 years ago when I started it, I didn't know. I just wanted to meet people like me. That was it. And since then, it has expanded from one city to 21 cities in the Carolinas. And we have over 8,500 members.
Wow.
We also
That's
have
incredible.
It's been crazy. Now, like any other organization, you know, not 8,500 members are active, but there are 8,500 members that at one point wanted to join, volunteer their email address, and are, you know, we include them because, you know, people have different things going on in their life, and sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, tell us about that CPN bug out you got planned.
Oh, yeah. So the sisters I told you about that came a few years back, they've actually planned this entire bug out for us. So this is a, we're calling it the CPN bug out. We're all going to a national park in North Carolina. We pretty much have taken over the campground. I am guessing with kids and everyone, it will probably have over 300 people. I think 82 campsites that are completely full. People have been doubling up for over a month now. So I've got two other people camping in my spot.
Wow. Wow.
And
hey,
so
Forrest,
yeah.
Let's, you know, we've got some limited time here. I want to get onto the comms subject. And I think we have a nice segue in that I'm a member of the Columbia, South Carolina, Carolina Preppers Network meetup group.
Okay.
And the, you know, I met Michael Klein through that. And a while back, I saw some message traffic regarding the bug out. And someone said, everyone must have a Baofeng radio. And so what's with that?
So one of the classes, we're going to be teaching a lot of classes. When I say we, it's just members of CPN, the Carolina Prepper Network. We're going to be having classes the entire weekend. And people, communications is always kind of the last thing Prepper does because they're scared of it. And so what we're doing, we did a big push so far this year, had over 50 people get their ham license, and we want people to bring their radios because we're going to actually practice doing a net. We're going to practice programming the radios. We're going to teach them everything we can hands-on. In the morning, it's going to be, drinking from the fire hydrant, but we want people to not only, because all preppers, they buy the $24 Baofeng. When you get further along in your comms career, you always kind of graduate to better equipment. But, hey, $24, you can't go wrong. So we're going to do a lot of real testing when it comes to nets, to doing simplex. We're going to do all that on site there.
That's great. Now, you mentioned another network that you belong to, and this one is actually a radio network. You mentioned Black Echo when we were talking earlier. What's that all about?
Okay, so Amron, so with the Carolina Prepper Network is changing its name at the end of this month to PrepperNet, and our communication piece is going to be handled totally by Amron, which is John Jacobs Schmidt out of Idaho, and he came up with this way of communicating, and it's called Black Echo. And what Black Echo is an FM transmitter that a low power that in a grid down scenario, I would be able to crank up my FM radio station and broadcast 60, 70, 80 miles and radius around my where I would be located. Now there's some offset issues there, but still it can get communications to a large amount of people because everyone has radios, car radios, and you can get information out. And so it's called Black Echo. During times of no distress, there's a limited wattage that you can do, meaning it really can go really past a couple blocks, but in that time of distress, it's totally illegal for me to pump that thing up and communicate to people. And we're going to test that also at the bug out camp. But the wattage is key because there is a legal limit, and we want to stay within that legal limit, which and where we'll be able to definitely reach all our campers without breaking that limit.
You know, you mentioned the legal limit. Now, that has to do with the watts that are transmitted, watts of power that are transmitted. But, you know, you mentioned legalities, and I don't think we've really talked, at least not on this show yet, about the Federal Communications Commission. I think everybody knows they govern radio. They govern everything, you know, even some of the cable TV, the whole nine yards, all electronic communication and some other things in the United States. And they have regulations. In fact, I have one of their regulations right here. It is... Let's see, Regulation 97.113. That's actually the United States code for anybody that's really interested. But one of the things that is prohibited, and it's directly related to tonight's show topic, is prohibited communications. Okay? And right after, there's a number of things, but right after communications intended to facilitate a criminal act, that's illegal.
Okay.
But right after that in the list is messages in codes or ciphers intended to obscure the meaning thereof, except as otherwise provided herein. And I couldn't quite figure that one out. But anyway, 10 codes, you know, the 1019, 1020, you know, all those things, 104, all of those kinds of codes are permitted. But codes and ciphers, and particularly encryption without permit, except otherwise provided herein, encryption is a no-no for amateur radio operators and just about anyone else, including preppers. But that's all we're going to get into tonight in terms of regulations. But pick up, you know, I don't think you've mentioned yet, Forrest, your background in communication security. Why don't you give us a rundown on that?
Well, I was in the United States Air Force in the late 80s, and I was actually an avionics and radar technician. While I was in there, I became actually a communications, not only a repair guy, but I actually came in the job title is actually communications mouse. Again, it's Air Force. But
MOS. That's MOS for military occupational specialty.
Right. And so I really, on a C-130 in our special operations group, I programmed radios. I controlled the net. I was home base most of the time in the C-130 with the officer in charge right beside me, actually running the show. I was there to facilitate and make sure that he could communicate who he needed to communicate with in the military. Since then, I've gotten out, you know, I was that guy out of the military in the 90s, but since then I've got my technician and my general license and, you know, have a HF rig. I've got, you know, all the toys that one needs, and I'm still learning.
You're being modest, Forrest. I want to go back to the Air Force apparently changed your life, and in 1986 you were a avionics comms specialist and worked on C-130 radios, radars.
And radios, yes. Mm-hmm.
By the way, for people who may not be aware of this, the C-130 is the workhorse of long-range special operations. And he volunteered with JSOC, which is the Joint Special Operations Command, for 2.5 years. That's what I mean. You know, you're being modest here. Tell us more, you know, about what you did and some of the missions you went on, with, you know, without giving us any
right.
classified information, of course.
Yeah, you know, I it's funny that you say all this because I tell people that and they have no idea what it is, and I usually don't try to get into it too much. But yeah, so JSOX is Joint Chiefs, of Staff or Chief, it's really working for a senior leader at the Pentagon, and our unit we had two C-130s. We had members from every branch of the military, not only the U.S., but we had some British service. We had a couple Canadian military. We had a guy from Italy. So our group was not just U.S. military. It branched out to other military and countries. We literally traveled the world and was on call 24 hours a day.
Can you give us a little bit of an idea? Now, that was back in the 80s, so satellites weren't as big a deal and everything. But can you give us an idea of what kind of comms you had on there? And I think you mentioned a problem once that you solved.
The comms, it's kind of interesting because some of the comms we worked on is archaic at this time, but yet some of it's still classified. I remember when the first UHF radio came out, they had, it was encrypted and also was anti-jamming. So every second or half second or 2 seconds, it would actually frequency hop to another frequency. At that time, we were concerned that if we're in a mission, someone would try to jam one frequency, and this particular radio would hop frequencies. So the only way you could jam it is by broadcasting through all the spectrum, which takes a lot of power to jam you. And and it was encrypted. And if you remember, it was in the late 80s. It was a father-son Navy guys that actually gave that technology to the Russians, and that was the exact technology we were using. But the interesting thing was the codes were uncrackable at the time, and we were frequency hopping at a random frequency. So even though the Russians had the technology, they could still not listen to us.
That's great.
Because it
very
was
good.
Because the encryption and the hopping, it had the sequence had to come from one source, which then I would, in a sense, programmed all the radios in the mission, and it was, even though they got the technology, they really couldn't use it against us.
I got it. Listen, 30 years later, we're now using internet on a regular basis. Excuse me. So, internet is, I think, a modern miracle. I really think God gave us this as a way to educate ourselves and connect with other people. And I want to get into the CPN Alert app, but before I do, I want to mention you are going to be an instructor at a very large gathering coming up called I forget the name of it, but it is large, and believe it or
prepper,
not, I'm a
prepper camp.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, prepper camp in Saluda.
Yeah, and they are having you as an instructor, and I understand you're giving a class on spy techniques. So tell us about those.
Okay, so last year I did a class. It was called Spy Class, and it was. I just tried to come up with some cool stuff. It was breaking out of duct tape. It was escaping evasion, picking locks. I introduced SDR, which is a software-defined radio, and the uses that you can use that for, which is interesting. Just this week, President Trump was in my hometown, Charlotte, and I brought up my SDR because with the SDR, it's receive only. Connects to your laptop, you can track airplanes in the sky. You don't need any other you don't need to connect to the internet, just that you receive their signal. I think it's the ADF signal, automatic directional finder.
Let me just stop you for a second. Hang on just a second. SDR is software-defined radio, and what does that mean? That means you can buy a $20. It means you can buy a $20 USB stick, which got some electronics in it. Stick that into a USB port on your computer, and your computer now becomes a very sophisticated receiver. And people used to pay literally thousands of dollars to do the kinds of things you can do with this $20 USB stick. It also has several free programs that are absolutely incredible. Tell us what you can do with those free programs.
Well, one of them, you can track any like aircraft, train, ship, and it will map it on a map, because all these transportations, devices or vehicles, they all send out a signal telling the airports where they're located, their airspeed, their location, their altitude. All that information is actually sent in a signal, and this software can receive it, decode it, and then put it on a map, and you can actually see the flight path of planes flying in your area. It can also receive any radio signal generated.
It's absolutely amazing.
It's a gigahertz.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, there's different models, and they cover different things, and there's actually a transmit-receive model that's designed for the ham radio bands. But before we get into that and try to, describe some more of these spy craft, I just selected the technology or the communications-oriented stuff out of your slides. But we've got a break now, so let's go ahead and take a short break. And when we come back, we'll get into some of these spy techniques. Okay, let's see. We were talking about the slide deck that I got from Forrest Garvin, our guest tonight, who's head of the Carolina Prepper Network, which is a very large organization spread throughout the Southeast. And he has a number of topics that he's going to, I think there were probably about 100 or so slides in there, but he was talking about a number of topics. One that I want to be sure to cover, and that's this CPN Alert app. Tell us about that for us.
Okay. So we have many methods to get information to our members, and one of them is an alert app. So as our members sign up for the alert app, they put what city that they're located in, and then they check the cities that they would like to get information from. So let's say that you're from Charlotte, and when you sign up, you just put "I'm from Charlotte," and you don't want any other information but Charlotte. Then you submit, you become a member. So as situations happen, or what I and my team determines that is information we need to get to our network, I can send an alert straight to your phone, and it is truly an alert. It will bing your phone, even if it's on silent, and say, "Hey, there's an alert, emergency." Two cases we've used this, and two good examples are in Cornelius, North Carolina. There was an active shooter downtown in Cornelius. And so I got that information. I messaged just the people in Cornelius, and all the members in Cornelius got that information, and they knew to stay out of downtown. And actually, two of our members said that they were actually heading that way as they got the alert. And went another way.
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Pardon me for interrupting, but, again, we don't have a lot of time.
Tonight. Okay.
I want to try to stay on track with communication security. You mentioned some apps that you use for covert communication.
Okay.
Tell me about those.
Okay. So one of the apps, the only app we really use that is on like a smartphone, is an app called Signal. Signal is an open source encrypted end-to-end communication app. So as I type a message and I press send, it has already verified my phone and your phone, and it encrypts it on my phone, sends it to your phone, and decrypts it. That is a very secure way of communicating. It also can do telephone calls. Because it's open source, it is one of the best apps, communications apps out there, because it is, you know, day to day, it is tested by hackers to make sure that it is doing what it says it should do. There's a great quote that Edward Snowden, you know, famous for, you know, leaking information, he has tweeted many times that the only communication app he uses is Signal.
Okay, let me ask you this now.
Okay.
You know, the internet can go down, and that is a definite thing in a disaster, particularly natural disaster. Cell phone service can be very easily overloaded, and you know, and sometimes it's physically the towers are knocked out. But we have two other threats or hazards. And I'm going to just briefly mention them, and then we'll understand another reason why I call Forrest the Prepper Extraordinaire. But most people know about EMP, you know, so I'm not going to even talk about that. There's also something called the a CME, a coronal mass ejection from the sun, and that is an actual event that has occurred in prehistoric history, and supposedly these things occur every 100 years. Now, I don't know about that, but in any case, we're way overdue. Now, what happens if the EMP does hit? And what happens, or what happens, and actually it's more likely to happen, the CME event happens. Well, Forrest has got that covered, and he is a contributor to a documentary called The Black Sky Event. And as I understand it, his main motivation for getting involved with that was to make sure that people understood that preppers aren't crazy.
That is correct. Yes.
Tell us more about that.
So this documentary will have some of the best experts in the industry.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second. The yep. best experts, because I know about them.
Okay, the best experts. A guy, Dr. Pry is his name.
Peter Pry, yeah.
Correct. He is, and I can't name all the ones that are in there, but former CIA director. There are even, I think, Newt Gingrich. There are several people that are in this video, this documentary, and the main reason for there's two reasons for the documentary. One is to bring awareness that we need to do something about our power grid. If the power grid goes down, it's going to be very bad for everyone, and that our military and our government are not fully prepared to operate in a grid down scenario. The other side is, because I know the guy that's doing this, and I've met him and listened to his heart, you know, doomsday preppers did not help preppers in general. Everyone thinks we're crazy. And so he asked me to come on and we talk about my network and, you know, talk about the different type of people that come to our meetups and let people know that, hey, you know, preparedness is not crazy. It's actually, you know, the smart thing to do, and it's a loving thing to do for your family and friends.
Absolutely. And listen, before we go too much farther, I want to make sure I don't forget this. Communication security is such a very, very broad topic. Today, it includes not only radio and cell phone, but also the internet. There is one organization I don't want to forget to recommend, and that is a group called DEFCON. And mm-hmm. DEFCON is, you know, slang for defense condition. You've probably heard about that through the movies. But in any case, This is a group of white hat, well, at least mostly white hat and gray hat hackers who meet once a year out in Las Vegas. And I went to one of their meetings a few years back, several years back. And the amazing thing about them is that they put all of their stuff online. So if you go to DEFCON.org, you will find an absolute treasure trove of everything with regard to computer hacking, computer security, Wi-Fi hacking and security, cell phone hacking, hacking everything. And lately, they've been talking about hacking the things like the Internet of Things, which will be connecting, you know, your refrigerator and your car right. and everything else. So DEFCON.org is definitely the thing to do. But let's talk a little bit more about communication security. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. You were talking about the documentary. And, yes, there are a lot of very good people in that documentary, and basically they're all warning the government and the public that this is a very, very serious threat.
Yeah, I guess the funny thing that came out of it, he said, I really want you on in this documentary because you are a business ex-banker, ex-military, and people don't think you're crazy. And I'm like, I think that's a compliment. I'm not sure. But so he came, we shot video for a good 5 hours. I think it's going to be coming out in January is his goal. He's got there's a preview video that you can go. I don't know the URL.
I think it's blacksky.com, if I'm not mistaken. Somebody in the chat room can check that.
But it's a great video to check out. He does a really good job, and he's won many awards with his documentaries in the past. So I'm looking forward to it.
I think the former ambassador R. James Woolsey, ambassador because they have that term for life. But he was a former director of the CIA. Now, one of the people who I don't know personally, but I'm very, very familiar with is Frank Gaffney. And Frank Gaffney is absolutely an expert on the Islamic threat. But his organization that he heads is called Center for Security Policy. And he really gets into this subject occasionally. And, you know, there are a lot of other security issues. But, I don't necessarily want to recommend you tune away from Prepper Broadcasting Network. But if you search for Center for Security Policy, I think you'll find their site. And they have multimedia. You know, they have videos on YouTube of meetings where all of these experts talk, about various subjects. And, you know, they have a podcast too, but it is definitely worth listening to get real in-depth analysis of some of the serious threats that the country faces.
Yes.
And so, you know, let's put that one to rest, in terms of the documentary, but there are a lot of good people in that documentary. But getting back on the subject of ComSec, what are some of the other methods that don't rely on the internet? I mean, let's say, you know, things really are bad and we don't have an internet anymore. What are some of the, you know, things you can do to communicate covertly?
So you're saying without electronics?
Correct.
Okay. Well, one of the things that that we're teaching in an upcoming a class is just some of the basic hobo signs. And I know that sounds crazy, but there's back, 100 years ago or 70 years ago, hobos create their own language to warn other people of if there's a safe environment, not a safe environment, where there's water. Where's a good shelter? And they would leave these signs, and to the ordinary person walking by would just think it's graffiti. So that's one form of a method that of communication. Also, we use a thing called one-time pad, which is a very secure way to get information back and forth. But the that it does have to change hands. So I could I would encrypt a document by hand encrypting it. We have no electronics at this time, and I would write it down. I could give that letters and digits to anyone, and they it would be almost I would say it's impossible unless you're a nation state to decrypt that, meaning you've got to have computers and hardware and software to do that, and major software and computers. I could give that document and say, hey, take this to Raleigh or California and give this to so and so, and on the other end they would be able to de-encrypt it. And it's and you only, the reason it's one time pad, you only use that code one time. And then once that message is passed, you tear everything up and you kind of start all over.
Got it. Now, okay, let's assume that we are in a black sky event, and, but we still have our radios and, you know, this whole rigmarole about Faraday cages and everything. Yes, there are ways you can protect your electronics. We're not going to get into that tonight, but there are ways. And I think while a black sky event would knock out the electric grid for sure, thereby, you know, basically shutting down the internet after a couple of days of generator power and batteries and stuff. But just radios alone, they are not really secure because, for example, in your spy traits or spy techniques slides here, I see some information about tracking a radio or tracking a frequency. Tell us a little bit about that technique, that spy technique.
Well, couple things you can do here is I have several radios. I have a scanner. Of course, any signal in that spectrum that the scanner can pick up, I can probably listen to. But there's a few other things that are pretty neat you can do. You can actually you can triangulate another radio by using a radio. And one of the things I taught in that class is you can actually use a Baofeng radio and triangulate, or even not even triangulate, just by using your body and the antenna, you can start to determine what direction the transmitted signal's coming from. So you could track someone using just a basic $24 radio. Also, I have another device that goes on.
Now, you didn't mention the directional antennas. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, so with the Baofeng, they do have antennas that are made just for directional finding. But what I'm talking about is if I take my radio, my $24 Baofeng radio, and I hear someone transmitting, I can take that radio and put it up against my chest. And as I turn around, if I still can hear the signals with that antenna pressed against my chest, that means that signal is pretty strong. So what I would do then is would possibly take the antenna off of the radio, because I want the worst antenna possible for my radio. Then I would put that against my chest, and I would turn, and when I turn away from the signal, more than likely my radio would not be able to receive that signal. As I turn into the signal, it is likely that I would be able to receive that. All of a sudden, I've eliminated 180 degrees of where that signal is coming from. And you can continue to do that until you get pretty close, because you could use, instead of going straight off of the antenna, you could use a smaller antenna, or you could use a piece of wire that is not really tuned for the antenna. And so you'll get to a point where you'll have no antenna. That means the signal, you're pretty close to the signal.
I got you.
But you can triangulate just with a regular Baofeng radio.
Yeah. Okay. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about triangulation because, you know, these antennas are not very expensive and you can actually make one. But let's go and pay some bills for G-Man. So go ahead, G-Man, with whatever you got. Okay, we're back and we're talking about tracking a frequency. So, excuse me, this is something that you need to be concerned about with communication security. And Forrest is talking about, excuse me, I got to get that cough button, you know, and I'm not talking about cough drops. I'm talking about an off-air button.
Right.
Anyway, now you have in your slides three points that are triangulating on a central point. But before we jump into how that's done, I want to talk a little bit about the antenna. You know, there's been a lot of rearrangement going on, and they call it refarming or rebanding. Actually, there's two different terms that are used. But in any case, rebanding is involved with the major driver for that is this interoperable communications that was one of the 9/11 commission's recommendations. So they wanted to see every law enforcement and fire department, ambulance and FBI agent and everybody to be able to talk to each other when need be. And so that's why there's this big move among law enforcement to go to what they're calling trunking, which right. is a very easy to pronounce term for something very, very complicated. Essentially, it's computer controlled, and it in fact is like Forrest was describing before. It's a frequency hopping kind of thing. But even worse than that, it is sometimes encrypted. It has right from the start, out of the box, it has encryption capability. Now, personally, and I don't get into politics very much, but I do want to say, I think that's a bad idea. You know, your local police department is paid by you. Your county sheriff's office is paid by you. And you should be able to listen to what's going on. Now, I understand there's sometimes, you know, a real need for security, but that's a rare kind of thing. Now, antennas for tracking, let me describe one possible way you could do this. Back in the day, before all the digital television and everything got rearranged, different television frequencies and what have you, there were VHF and UHF television channels. Now, the antennas, some of the better television antennas, especially the long ones that taper off, and they, okay, they're wide at the back and then they taper off to very short elements in the front. Those antennas are pretty directional, okay?
Right.
So some of the, you know, TV antennas are more than likely useful. Now, I'm not saying they're the best, but they might be useful for triangulating a radio signal. Would you agree, Forrest?
Absolutely, yes. And the kind of scenario in the slide was if you have two friends or you have one friend, y'all live like 8 miles away from each other and you're both receiving the same signal, I could use my antenna for while I'm listening and kind of move the antenna until I get the absolute best signal possible. And then I can note that on a compass. My friend 8 miles away could do the same thing and, you know, move the antenna until it gets the best signal because we have signal meters that we can tell, you know, so it's, we're not just judging it on the sound.
How strong the signal is. How
strong
it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he gives me his coordinates and I give him mine. And then all of a sudden we can know within yards possibly where that person is transmitting. The ham radio community, they call it a fox hunt because they don't appreciate when people are transmitting on their frequency, and especially if they don't have a license. I actually have a friend of mine owns the repeater on Mount Mitchell in North Carolina. And one of their members had their ham radio. As he got out of the truck, his ham radio receiver fell between the seats and keyed
up. And it
up,
got stuck on transmitter.
It got stuck. And so they did that, and within 15 minutes, they went to the parking lot, and they go, yep, there he is. They didn't know who it was until they saw the truck. They knew exactly who it was.
Yeah, Let me just finish off the tracking thing by saying that the front of the antenna, which is the shortest element in the antenna, there's long ones at the back, and those are reflectors, and the short ones in the front are directors. And if you point that with the pointy end of it, when you point that short end at a transmitter, it is somewhat directional. So you can test it by holding that antenna connected to a receiver with a cable, and you get a known signal source, and you just kind of pivot yourself 360 degrees. And to test how directional that antenna is, if you turn all the way around, that signal should be very, in other words, do a 180 degree turn from the direction of the transmitter, and you keep the antenna pointed away from the transmitter 180 degrees, you should have the lowest signal strength. And
right.
Consequently, when you start swinging around again, you're going to get the highest signal strength. And that's almost every radio has something to little bar, you know, bar indicators to show that. So that is a threat. You know, we really do have threats out there. I mean, someone can find out where you are just by using a cheap antenna. But some of these other slides that you had here, privacy, Google is watching you. You're going to describe Tor, you know, talking about communication security. If we do have the internet, tell us about Tor, what you can do with that.
Well, the Tor is it's a network actually that was created by the United States Navy for spies as they're spying in another country across the water. As they're spying, they need to get communications back to America. So they created this network that uses the internet, but it's they call it the dark web or the deep. I mean, there's all kinds of names for it, but they used it literally to transmit information back to the United States. Today it's used, there's a lot of bad things that go on. There is, it's good and bad.
Go ahead. Let me give our listeners just a very brief orientation here. The internet itself, the actual word internet stands for interconnected computers. Interconnected networks, I'm sorry. And these networks all talk the same language. It's the internet protocol. That's the IP address. Yes. That's the address, and the language is now websites are one form of internet traffic. When you think about it, if you're using VoIP like Skype, and I wanted to ask you about Skype too in terms of the encryption of that for us, but let's put that off for just a second. The internet is just a pipe. It carries all kinds of protocols, one protocol traffic. One type is email. I mean, email is an entirely separate kind of traffic that flows through this pipe. Now, if you use a regular browser, you're going out to regular http://  websites. But if you use a Tor browser, which is free, then you're going to use the onion routing system, which is not the same as the IP. Well, it works on IP. It's part of the internet pipeline, but it is, like Forrest said, entirely separate. It's not email. It's not websites. It's not VoIP. It's entirely different. And that's what we're talking about here. Tor is the free software.
Correct.
So can you wrap up that desktop?
Yes, and so so there's a network of computers, and the way, one of the reasons it's kind of secure, a lot of people would argue that it's not, but I know that when I read the facts of the crime ring, Silk Roads, it took them years to crack that. They were doing drug trafficking, sex trafficking, everything bad you can think of. The only way they caught the people involved in that was a gentleman used a username that he used on the dark web, and he used it in real life. And that's the only way, after 3.5 years of trying to crack and find out where these people were. But it goes through different computers. It changes the route. The routing, it's a pretty secure network. Do I think nation states are listening and are making their own network and building their own nodes? Absolutely.
You know, but there's a picture here. I'm looking at it from your slides. It shows an NSA data center. That's that new facility that is
yes.
It Utah where they built that?
Yes, they watch and record everything. Absolutely.
And you know, today storage is so dense. I mean, I have a little thing that looks like, I mean, it's, you could stack four of them tall, four of these little devices tall, and you would have, you could have 4 terabytes of storage, and it would be smaller than a package of cigarettes. Okay. It's called solid state storage. So if you can imagine what we can buy for $150
right.
bucks. Think about what the government can afford. And I mean, those giant buildings that they've got out there, and you've got a picture of it right here in NSA data center out in Utah. Those buildings could hold literally millions of them. But anyway, we're going to go tonight. We've just barely scratched the surface. So I hope we can thank you, Forrest, for being a guest. A
hey,
very
thanks for having
guest.
Me on. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I hope that we can get into this subject in a little more depth. But good evening. Goodbye, everybody, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.